Last week, we talked about the great adventure. We talked about, we were ending the series of Now What? And as we talked about the great adventure, I encourage you that the great adventure was to walk out of here and to make him known, to walk out of here sharing the gospel, to walk out of here. What step would you take to walk out of here and make a difference in your world? Not living in this sanctuary, but living out in the world. How would you make that happen? I wonder, I heard from some of you who actually took that step. Did they actually respond in the issue of trusting Christ? No, but you took the step to speak to them about it. And it was such a joy for you to say, I broke that barrier. I'm no longer, yeah, there's times I'm fearful, but I've done it. I've shared Christ. And now, whether regardless of whether they respond or not, I've done what I need to do. And that's encouraging, isn't it? It makes you want to do it more. It makes you want to share the joy of the Lord. So I hope that you see your walk out these doors as the great adventure. To further that, through the summer, we're going to take the next few weeks, and we are going to look at principles from Proverbs. The principles found in Proverbs. You say, well, why Proverbs? Why within that process? Proverbs is the foundation for right living. Have we lost? Okay, we got it there. We just don't have it. Oh, it's up in the ceiling. That's why. So as long as you've got it here, we're good. Principles from Proverbs. Why Proverbs? Proverbs is that the very foundation of what we do. Proverbs is the foundation for right living here and now. We can't live our life in just this sanctuary. We can't just stay in this bubble as so many believers do. We must live in this world. We are part of this world. We are living in this world. We're not to be of it, but we are to live within it because we find ourselves within it. But sometimes we become a holy huddle, a little church clique. It's sad to say, even in this church, there are cliques. You say, no. Are you one of them? Are you the group that comes in? Are you the person that comes in and you live in your holy little huddle of this is my life group or this is my guys or this is my gals or these are my students or these are whatever? Or do you say, no, we've got to get out of that little holy huddle and reach to everybody who walks in that door? I mean, I know some of you, I tease you. Darren's great. He always changes seats and it just screws me up royally. Where's Darren? I know most of you are where you're going to be. I can pray for you throughout the week because I know where you're sitting. If you ever come in and everybody changes, I'm going to be really lost that week as who's to pray for. I'm going to probably think you weren't even here. That's the truth. Because we come in, but we need to break that holy little huddle. We can't live in a bubble. We've got to go out in the world. We go to school. We go to work. We go to our office. We go to our homes. Proverbs is the book in the Bible that gives us the wisdom and equips us to handle life. It gives us that the motivation as well as the real handle on how to motivate life. With problems and with people. And we all have problems, and at times we all have people. And people are what causes the problems at times, is it not? It is, yeah. Think about how many times you're just dealing with, I'm in a relationship at work or at church or at home or whatever, and you say, wow, what am I doing? What am I doing? And what are they doing? And we just get this drama regarding. Well, Proverbs was designed to deal with that. Wilkinson and Boyle write, there are two theologians write about this, about Proverbs. I'm just going to quote it because it was the best. Proverbs was designed to equip the reader in practical wisdom, discernment, discipline, and discretion. These maxims emphasize the development of skill in all the details of life so that beauty and righteousness will replace foolishness and evil as one walks in dependence upon God. That is the Proverbs. I know many of you, as I have done in the past, I take the date. Today is the 4th. I read Proverbs 4. Many of you do that throughout the entire month. You just keep repeating it and keep repeating it and keep repeating it. Proverbs 1, day 1. Proverbs 2, day 2. Let me just tell you, you keep putting that in your head. That is not a bad thing to do. You keep filling your day every day with the Proverbs, the maxim. Chapters 1 to 9 usually deals with those who are a little more youthful. But we can all take advantage of that. We can all look at that. We can all say, okay, these are what I need to know. Proverbs are short, observant statements declaring profound truths that give wisdom for life. They're short, observant statements that declare profound truths that can give wisdom for life. Now listen, in seminary, some of you have been there, there's a great debate. Let me just give you the great debate. On this over here, they say that Proverbs are promises. Promises found in Proverbs. The great debate is that they say, no, they're not promises, they're principles from Proverbs. They're principles. And, you know, you're in school, you can debate that for days and days and days and days. Here's how I take it. You know, I'm kind of in the middle of the road. As I come to Proverbs, there's many statements that you will read in Proverbs that really come to the point of talking about God. They show you who God is. And when they show you who God is, I believe that is a promise. God's not going to change. That's a promise. So like in Proverbs where it says the king's heart's in the hands of the Lord, that's about God, it's his direction, I say that's a promise, right? He's not going to say, no, he's in the hands now, but he's not. We, our leaders, our kings, the king's heart is in the hands of the Lord. It's not out of control. He directs it where he's going to direct it. Now, that would be a promise to me. If it's said about God, if it says God is faithful, that's a promise, right? That's what it's going to be. But those, there's those as well who are not, it's not promises. It's just maxims about wisdom, and they are promises. They're not promises. They're just these principles that we take, and we dissect apart from that. For example, I just mentioned the king's heart's in the hands of the Lord. Proverbs 12 says, listen now, listen, this is what it says. If this was a promise, we better claim it quick, but it's not. It says, no harm befalls the righteous. No harm befalls the righteous. Is that true? No, because it's a comparative, because he goes on to say, but the wicked are filled with trouble, right? The principle here is living righteously, following God, is the path of life. You will have less trouble. Yet we know the righteous do suffer. Doesn't he say that? Job suffered. He was righteous. We are righteous, declared righteous. Do we have suffering? Yeah, he says, in fact, we need a plan for suffering. So within that, it's the principle. It's a contrasting principle. Well, if you live righteously, if you walk by the wisdom found in Proverbs, you will live an easier and better life. But if you don't, if you live wickedly, you're going to, man, there's going to be fall, lots of trouble. Three methods are used to show God's wisdom. And we're going to see this as you go out. One is subjects and statements. Subjects, topics. He talks about, man, there's so many topics, subjects. That every subject we deal with in life is pretty much found in Proverbs. And as he touches that, he gives subjects about it, and then he gives statements about it. The other is people and problems. Isn't that right? He talks about the fool. He talks about people who cause problems, the people and the problems, and he speaks to that. That's really chapters 10 to 22 within the book of Proverbs. He talks about people and problems. And the last one is counseling and correction. So when he's counseling, he's giving wise those issues of the counseling of part of that and the correction that we need in our life to say, listen, don't go down that path. Wide is that path. Don't go down it. He's counseling us to listen, to watch the word, to know the word, and correcting us. We'll see some of that. Now, most often in the book of Proverbs, couplets are used. And there's three types of those couplets. I know this stuff's boring, so hang on. This is the first week. Then we'll go through it. We'll see actual things. But the contrastive couplet in Proverbs is used a lot. It uses the word but. So like in chapter 14, he talks about, he who despises his neighbor sins. But happy is he who is gracious to the poor. It's a contrast. You see that? The contrastive, he'll say, happy is the man who does this. Or the issue here, he who despises his neighbor sins. But it's a contrasting couplet. The other couplet is a completive couplet. It uses the words and or so. So in chapter 11, it says, the generous man, listen carefully to this verse, folks. The generous man will be prosperous. And he who waters himself will be watered. Did you get that? See the and? The generous man will be prosperous. And he who waters, who pushes out, who waters, will also be watered. That's the completive, it completes it, and or so. The last couplet is comparative. And it uses the words better than or like so. So in chapter 16, he talks about better is a little with righteousness than great income with injustice. It's comparative in nature. He puts these things. Most of Proverbs are written in two-verse prose. There's two statements, and they fall into one of those couplets. Now, in chapters 1 to 9, it's a little larger than that, but mostly it falls into couplets like that. But right from the beginning, the author Solomon gives us the purpose. So for all of that, those are things just to give you an insight into as you read Proverbs, how we read it. But as we jump into Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 to 9, we can actually read this. It says, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence, wisdom, to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance for, and that's not on the screen, For, where am I? Deciding, saying, got for my the fear of the Lord. For the fear, okay, understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. This is, he starts right off the top. The words, it tells us who authored most of these is Solomon. There's a few who are written by Agur, there's a few, but most of them are written by Solomon. And he gives us right from the top what the issue is that we are to look at. First, it says, for gaining wisdom and instruction. For gaining wisdom and instruction. Godly wisdom, having the ability to cope with life in a God-honoring manner. Godly wisdom, the wisdom from Proverbs, is having the ability to cope with life, be it a subject, be it a person, be it a counseling situation, whatever it may be, having the ability to cope with life in a God-honoring manner. If we could do that alone, would we not be better off? No matter what addresses us, no matter what comes to us, if we could have that wisdom to deal with every situation in a God-honoring manner. One writer says that wisdom literature, that this is part of wisdom literature, means being skilled in godly living. Notice that the operative word there is godly, God-honoring and in a godly manner. That the wisdom that we're talking about is not common sense. We'll look at that. It's not just worldly wisdom, though there are some who are wise to the world. We're talking here in Proverbs about godly wisdom. But he says we are to learn through instruction. We need to learn to know. There is an emphasis in this word on humility and dependence. God's ways are usually, and just about now, always the opposite of the world's ways. Are they not? When you look at how we want to respond in our flesh or how the world responds to situations, are they not usually the opposite of what God would say to do? This last week I had a counseling situation, and we were talking about work. And the topic of self-promotion came up, of being a self-promoter. That I need to go to work. I need to try to self-promote work. And yet within that, and we talked about it, and it sounds right. Well, you need to promote self. You don't need to be shy. You need to be promote self. Promote what you can do. Talk about what you can do. Promote self. Promote self. Promote self. The only problem with that is that's not found in God's word. It's not. In fact, what is found in God's word is that we are to die to self, to be humble. Not to take the arrogance on of, well, I can do that, or I can do this. No, it says, let your actions be known. You know, do what you need to do, but you do not need to come to the point of saying, I'm going to be arrogant about, promote me, promote me, promote me. When we start promoting self, and the greatest example of that is Joseph. Joseph never promoted himself, did he? Boy, he was down in the pit, then up on top. Down in the pit, up on top. Down in the prison, up on top. You know, people would disown him or people would fail to mention him, but he never promoted self. He just kept faithful to the work. He did his best work and let others see that and let others promote. Isn't it better when your boss is talking about you in a good way than you trying to talk about yourself to him in a good way? When it starts from the top down saying, man, do you see the actions of his life? But we get caught up in this world, I got to self-promote. I got to be the greatest this, I got to be the greatest that, and I got to let people know it. I got that sale. I did this. I did that. Boy, self-promotion is a cancer within us that people look and say, there's a tinge of arrogance there. We need to learn through instruction. We need to have a humble spirit that say, man, I can learn from anybody. I can learn from something from everybody and not be arrogant. He says the other purpose of this writing is to understand words of insight, to understand, to consider, to perceive. That when we understand, as he said in 1-9, the understanding words of insight, it's given the ability to discern truth from error, right from wrong, good from evil. And also, especially in the first 9 chapters given to those who were fairly young here, we're talking about students here, we're talking those who are still young, but the words of insight for you to perceive and understand the consequences of the choices that you're making, that's wisdom. That's wisdom. Not just saying yes to good and evil, or maybe it's not the best decision, but to have the understanding, the maturity that it comes from Proverbs to be able to say, I can see the potential consequences, the fallout of this choice and of this decision. and the maturity that comes. We need to understand those words of insight. Number three, it says to receive instruction in wise behavior. Much of the word, we know this, much of the word focuses, the entire narrative of the word, the entire thread throughout the word is Jesus Christ, born, crucified, risen, coming again, and ultimately we're in heaven. That's the book, okay? Yet along the way here, he's not just focusing, and aren't we glad that God didn't say, well, trust in me, and then, you know what, you're on your own. Do the best you can until you die or I return and we're in heaven and everything will be great. Because that's not what he did. He didn't say, come to know me and kick the ball rolling and say, okay, now you're on your own. He says, receive instruction in wise behavior. He's saying, listen, Proverbs is given not just to focus on heaven. In fact, very little is focused on heaven in Proverbs. It's focused on our life. It's focused on living in this world right now. As bad as it may be, whether you hate this, like that, our government, whether you like this, hate that, whatever it may be, your job, place, it's how do we live in this environment, in this world, in a godly fashion? We receive instruction in wise behavior, living godly, having the right priorities. I was talking even this week that the bottom line is we're to live simply. I think we've lost that frame. I think we've lost that desire to just live. Simply, we want more, we want more, we want better, we want bigger, we want newer. I don't know how often we really function on what we need versus what we want. And yet we need to receive instruction in wise behavior. You know, the bottom line is probably going to say everything you own, guess what? It owns you. So maybe we need to own a little less, worry a little less. And live simply. Number four, he says, giving insight to the young. Giving insight to the young. As I mentioned, chapters 1 to 9 really deal with the young. And he's telling them, don't live aimlessly. You see this even in don't let any man despise your youth, look down upon you because you're young. Proverbs goes beyond that. Those of you who are considered young here, some of you students as well, listen, don't use youthfulness as an excuse. He's saying, listen, you read the Proverbs. Even at your age, God's understanding will be in your heart so that you don't live aimlessly, he's talking about. Don't live without plans. Don't live this spiritual plans especially. He says, be wise. Giving insight to those who are young. That's part of the purpose of this book. And number five, ever learning and discerning. Always a student. Always a student. And at the same time, always a mentor. Who are you pouring ear into? Who are you pouring the wisdom? As we get older, it falls upon us to pour into those who are younger. Are you here today, regardless of our age, regardless of where you're at, are we willing today to stretch today, to deepen our faith, to deepen our understanding and our walk with God? Is it about us or is it about him? Have we say, well, I know all this, and I need to do all this, and I want it my way? Or do we say, no, what? It doesn't matter what I know. I'm not going to boast in what I know or who, all the wealth that I have. I'm going to boast in that I know and understand God, Jeremiah 9. That's what I boast in. I'm ever learning, always looking at that, saying, God, what is it that you want to teach me? I want to have your discernment to know what is most. I asked you last week, some of you had to stretch to say, I'm going to walk out that door, and I'm going to live the adventure of sharing my faith. Are you willing to do that, to stretch? Are you willing to say, man, I may face rejection, but I'm going to share with those that I love? I'm going to share with someone who's in my life to understand our walk with God. That's what Proverbs is all about. Verses 7 to 9, really, he gives us this whole goal of all of this. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland. And all of that, we read that, they are a garland. Now look at here, what he says. First, he says, fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. That awesome reverence that you are, that we serve an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-present God. And that's where it all begins. If we are going to seek godly wisdom, we have to understand the God who is giving us that wisdom. That we need to pursue that wisdom. Can you trust him? Yes, you can. Can you really believe that God cares about you? Yes, you can. The fear of the Lord, that awesome reverence, that understanding of who God is, the majesty of God, that fear, not just this, oh, I'm afraid of God type thing. No, it's so much bigger than that. Our God, as it says, is a jealous God. Why? He says, serve no others. I'm a jealous God, the right way. I'm a jealous God. You only need to serve me because I'm the only one true God. Do you trust that? Do you believe that? He says, fear the Lord. He also says, fear the fool. He's talking about the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The fools follow their own folly. And we need to stay away from the fool. We need to realize, wait a minute, I can't trust what the fool says. I can't trust. Part of our wisdom is able to identify when somebody is saying something that just doesn't make sense. You're a fool. In spiritual wisdom, you're a fool. It goes against what God says. We need to stay away from the fool. Fear the fool. Have the wisdom to identify their folly. Have the wisdom not to be involved with that. You who are students and still very much into the peer pressure issue, sometimes you need to step back and say, I don't think so. I don't want to be part of that. He also says, be faithful. He says, be faithful. I mean, listen to your father's instruction first. Listen, fathers, listen to your father's instruction. But where does that put the onus upon the father? Think about it. He's telling us to listen, the young, to listen to your father's instructions. But what does that say about the dad? They better be instructive, and they better be instructive in godly wisdom, correct? It puts an onus upon us as dads to say, I'm going to teach, and I want to instruct. And the kids, yes, they need to listen, but I better be teaching them the right thing. I'll tell you what. I'm going to step off and be, now I'm not going to be politically correct at all. And this is not in the notes because I wasn't going to go there, but I'm going to go there. Some of you have this idea. I dealt with it this week with another family who's not in our church who I was trying to share Christ with. But they were saying, we just let our kids decide on their own. We want them to be, you know, we tell them that God's important, but it's up to them. That's not teaching your kids in godly instruction. Write it down, boys. You don't need to back off and say, well, I want to be that all-inclusive father who says you got to find it on your own. Sure, we want our kids to own their own faith, but we better teach them what the faith is. We better teach them that we have one God, one Spirit, and that's what we need to instruct. We need to instruct them in godly living. Don't be pansy about it. Don't be wimpy about it. Say, no, this is what God says. This is the way you're to live. And then it says, to listen, not only that, it says, be faithful to your mother's teaching. You gals thought you were going to get off the hook, huh? Boy, give it to them dads, Bill. Be faithful to your mother's teaching. What does that say about moms? You better teach. And you better teach the godly living of it, the godly maturity that comes with it. The whole emphasis here is on the family. Why? Because God says even in Deuteronomy, where does teaching and education, all of that come from? It comes from the family. It comes from that home school. Not advocating homeschooling your kids, but I am advocating homeschooling your kids. It is not our education system, be it public, private, Christian, whatever it is, to educate your kids, to be involved in your kids' life. It is our responsibility as men and women, husbands and wives, whatever it may be, wherever you find yourself as a single mom, as a single dad, wherever it is, it's our responsibility to take that instruction, to take that wisdom and teach it to our kids. Now, as I close, common sense versus godly wisdom, because I know this is going to come up. Some of you are thinking common sense. Common sense is not godly wisdom. Common sense can make life easier. There's no doubt about it. But wisdom imparts life. Common sense can make life easier. Common sense usually does. But it doesn't have a spiritual component. Wisdom imparts life. He says wisdom gives us life. It gives us purpose. Wisdom does. Common sense may be very wise. It's raining outside. Take an umbrella. There's a storm. Take an umbrella. That's wise, isn't it? Wear a hat. Or take a bath. Take a shower. Free. God gives it to you. Whatever it may be. Common sense. But wisdom imparts life. So there's a storm, I take a shower. And yet, God tells us through Proverbs, when there's an emotional storm, when there's an emotional storm in our life, wisdom says, listen, he's never going to leave you. Wisdom says a gentle answer turns away wrath. So when you're facing a storm, as he talks about relationally as we go through Proverbs, listen, do you understand? Our factor is, I'm going to give him peace of my mind. You better not. You can't afford to lose any. But the point being, within that process, it says a gentle answer turns away wrath. I don't know how many times I have to tell people, if you just watch your words, the drama in your household would be gone. Just watch your words. It all starts with words. Just watch your words and see what happens. So once again here, Proverbs is written for us to gain life, which comes from our goal. Not just heaven, but to live right now. That God says, I want to be in your life. I just didn't give you salvation and then now kick you off and you're on your own with no roadmap. He says, I want to give you life. I want you to live it to the fullest, as John says. I want you to have it to the fullest. But Proverbs is the roadmap to get us there. How to live it to the fullest. And it fits especially when it was written for us to gain life here, wisdom here, which comes also from our goal. What's our goal? I say it all the time. What's our purpose? To know him. Proverbs is given to us so that we may know him better. We can see the promises of where he talks about God himself. Bam, that's a promise. But we can see the principle where he says, this is how you're going to live. This is how you should live in godly living, in godly desire, in godly focus. This is how you should do that. To know him, that is our purpose. To know him in a way that thus when we walk out these doors, guess what? To make him known becomes easy, isn't it? When we know him in such a fashion that we can walk out these doors to take that great adventure, to be different. And my challenge to you again today is to dream. What would God have you do? Man, I tell you what, I've told you, many of you in our own life group, I've had that situation where they were questioning, and in our life group, what's your bold and audacious prayer? What are you praying for? Man, I want to tell you something. Sometimes we don't see that often take place. But I had a bold and audacious prayer, and it got answered this morning. Can you trust God? Can we live the adventure of dreaming? Saying, God, I'm going to pray bold and audacious to see what you can do. I want to reach my office. I want to reach my home. I want to reach my friends, my family, my neighbors. I want to grow a church. I want to grow another church and grow another church and grow another church. But most of all, I want to live in godly living. I want to be the one who people see. I want to be the salt and the light. I want to be the visible representation of Jesus to those that I walk around. Perfect? Oh, never. Never, never, never. Making mistakes? Always. But with a desire always to know him better. To ever be that student, to ever be that learner, to be ever that guy that says, God, stretch me. Let's pray.